worker back home. I raced up to Canada, land of the snow. Katana sportsman, tour de force. Short track racing in the great white north. Living on horsepower most of my life. Got me a race car, got me a wife. Everything good now, power to the floor. Short track racing in the great white north. I'm in Canada, baby, racing in the great white north.
Great white north.
Speedway Report is produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. We will remember a dear friend of the modified community, Mario Fiore. IndyCar returns to Road America, and smoke rises. All this and more. Welcome to Speedway Report for Monday, June 27th. 2016, from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. I'm Patrick Reynolds, and thank you for joining us tonight. From the North Myrtle Beach ZRN Studios, producer Jeff Gilder is with us. Jeff stopped by the fitness studio here in Lake Norman on Saturday and made Tim Allen jealous of his construction gills. Ha, ha, ha! How are you, Daddy Jay?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I thought you were about to say that I walked by your equipment in your gym and thought about working out.
No, they'd never believe that,
no,
would they?
No, that would never happen.
I know. I figure that's most people see that and it's a pretty expensive coat hanger.
Yeah, I got one in my garage.
Yeah. No, the floor holds the laundry basket just as easily as a gym does. So.
Yeah.
You know, people make that mistake of the extra purchases. So. Well, yeah, we're doing radio tonight, but I'll tell the people a little bit, clue them in somewhat. We've made some wonderful strides in the room here. We've got a television studio built into the radio studio. This is exciting.
How about that?
How about that? How'd you do that? I don't even know how you just came in and did and you left. It was like, I didn't even get a chance to thank you or the Lone Ranger on your horse out of town already. And it's like, I got a TV studio.
Don't let him BS you, people. He put me on the horse and hit the horse on the ass as a way out. Told him, said, get on out of here, boy.
I used you. You bought the hardware. You bought me dinner. Now get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Got use for it. Yeah.
That was cool, man. Good day's work.
We had a fun day. We had a fun day building this. I'll be like Al. Your assistant Al. You were Tim Allen, I was the assistant Al.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You know. And we had no tool girl with us. It was just the two of us here, but we did a heck of a job. I can't wait for Speedway Report Television as it comes to fruition here. We're close. We're here. We're just about here. This is awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, as Jerry Smith ended his show right before us, might as well tell our audience, get them familiar with the schedule. We will be off the air the next 2 weeks of our live broadcast, July 4th and July 11th, and we'll return Monday, July 18th, in 3 weeks. A little bit of a, would you call it a summer vacation for us?
Summer vacation, midsummer siesta, whatever you want to call it. Take a nap. Y'all relax. We'll be back.
We will be back. I'm going to call it a work time because it gives me a chance to play with all the new television toys that you gave me.
There you go. You can actually start producing some TV shows.
Yes,
yeah,
we can.
They don't have to wait for me now. You can.
Right.
That's we've given Patrick absolute and complete independence. He can produce at will now. So whatever schedule he wants to be on, he doesn't have to wait till Monday night to give you guys content. So I think you'll see some things coming out of there before long. We got a couple more cables and a little box or two on the way up that I had shipped up there that you'll get after tomorrow, and you can get that in and go. But yeah, we'll be off the air on Monday night for the next two Mondays after this one. Next Monday for the 4th of July weekend, then the following Monday I will be returning from University of Tennessee, where we're covering the Paralong Drive Cup that we've done. This will be the third straight year. First year we did in Mesquite, Nevada. Last year we did it up in Loudoun, Tennessee. And this year it's being hosted by the University of Tennessee. So trying to get that thing here in Myrtle Beach so the old boy here doesn't have to travel so far to cover
it. Cut your commute down.
Yeah, cut my commute way down. I think I've earned the right to have it here after traveling for them for 3 years. So anyway,
Does that move around? Does that move around somewhat?
Yeah, well, they're trying to find the right solution for it. Right now, it moves around. Ideally, we'd like to have the we'd like to have it in Myrtle Beach, but the problem is we don't have a grid large enough to put those guys on. I mean, those guys are hitting the balls 400 plus yards, and we don't have a driving range that's properly set up to do that. Believe it or not.
I don't believe it. In Myrtle Beach, you're telling me that...
Well, we're at sea level here, and most golfers don't hit the ball 300 yards, you know. But these long drive guys are hitting it well beyond the length of the average driving range here, and it has to be measured. It's not like you can just let them go hit it in the woods, you know. Mm-hmm. At the end, we got to know exactly how far they hit it. So we need 420 yards or so to hold... At least hold the world record, I think, is 416 or 409 for this group. I don't know what it is for the professional long drive. These are para long drive. These are guys that, as a matter of fact, Jarrett Brents is the world champion, and he's a double amputee above the knee. So these guys are it's part of what's called adaptive golf. They don't call themselves disabled. They call themselves differently abled, which I think is really cool. You can't go watch or be part of this stuff without just really being inspired, but I'm really happy to be working with them and have been, as I said, for about 3 years now, and it's a cool thing. You'll see guys that are paralyzed from the waist down, guys with one arm, guys with one leg, no, two legs, I mean, one, both double amputees, triple amputees. It's amazing.
And they're smacking the ball 400 plus yards.
Yeah, not all of them, but the really good guys are.
Wow.
There's several divisions of them, but Anthony Netto, who is paralyzed from the waist down, hits it 300, over 300.
Good grief. Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Inspiration. Yep. They name is the golfers.
Yep. So, you know, if you're a golfer and you're making excuses about your game, none of that stuff matters, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make it happen.
Yep, just you know, suck it up and go spank it.
Well, the make it happen, that's kind of the, I guess, the motto or the mindset of so many of the racers that tune into our show each week and that we cater to.
Yeah,
here on the network, that racing mentality kind of, I guess, shows up in your golfers as well. Just, we're going to get it done and excuses be damned.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, good reason for you to miss the show on July 11th, an outstanding reason, actually, and we look forward to the return July 18th. I will be like a new race car. We won't be taking it to its first competition right away. We'll have some test miles, some test days with it before we break it out. But all the more reason to check out SpeedwayReport.com, because that's where some great new TV shows will be posted. Jeff, I thank you for bringing us to life this evening.
My pleasure.
I appreciate all you did for the studio here over the weekend. I appreciate our friends at RacersReunion.com at our chat rooms joining in. As I was waiting, and the legend has surfaced on the stock car site, stockcar.racersreunion.com. I say hello to Danny and Larry are there, along with Nicholas. Jerry Smith still with us, and the legend, Tim Leeming, has joined us. Hi, guys. Good to see all of you on the drag racing site. Donna's with us, as well as John and Thomas Warren. Thank you all for being here tonight. If you'd like to join them, just head over to racersreunion.com, sign into a chat room, either the stock car site or the drag racing site, and bench race away. That's what we do every single Monday night, except as the aforementioned next two Monday nights. But really, July 18th and on out, we're here every Monday. Welcome, everyone, to the show, coast to coast, around the World Wide Web, wherever you are listening. Appreciate you being with us tonight. Coming up later on tonight, if we have some time, we'd like to open up the phone lines for you. We've got a busy show planned. A reminder, like our Facebook page, Speedway Report with Patrick Reynolds. And I'm on Twitter. My handle is Speedway Pat. And coming up as our special guest tonight is Bones Bercier. Bones goes back in Northeast Modified Racing quite a ways, and he will help us remember NASCAR Championship team owner Mario Fiore, who the racing world lost last week. We will talk to Bones very shortly. Right now, I want to hop over, at least begin and start the Speedway Report victory lane lap. We had a very busy weekend as the early summer gets hotter and keeps going, and we'll get through some of this right now. Probably have to pick it up a little bit later in the show. For the results, the NASCAR Sprint Cup cars were in Sonoma, California yesterday. What a win! Tony Stewart returns to an anticipated victory lane. Gosh, where everybody seemed to be happy. He and Denny Hamlin swapped the lead twice on the final lap and an exciting ending. Joey Logano was third, Carl Edwards fourth, and Martin Truex Jr. was fifth. The NASCAR trucks were out in Madison, Illinois at the Gateway Motorsports Park. Christopher Bell won his second tour race driving for Kyle Busch Motorsports. Ben Rhodes, Daniel Hemric, Johnny Sauter, and Eric Jones were the top five. The race was red flagged three times in the late stages for crashes, including a bit of a wrestling match between John West Townley and Spencer Gallagher. The NASCAR Whelen Modified Tour was in Riverhead, Long Island, New York, and the Long Island boys swept the first three spots. Timmy Salamito was your winner over Justin Bonsignor and Donnie Lea. Doug Kobe had some troubles, but he still leads the championship standings. NASCAR K&N Pro Series West held the matinee on Saturday as the undercard to the Cup cars were Cup driver Chase Elliott passed leader Noah Gragson for the win with three laps remaining. Grayson Rahs was third, Ryan Partridge fourth, and Riley Herbst was fifth. IndyCar's return to Road America in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. Oh, why did you ever leave? Awesome venue, awesome event, awesome facility. Will Power started from the pole and controlled most of the Kohler Grand Prix yesterday for the win. Tony Kanaan gave Power all he could handle in the closing laps in a tight second-place finish. Kanaan closed on the softer red option tire, while Power ended the race on the black, harder compound. Graham Rahal completed the podium. Ryan Hunter-Reay was fourth, and Elio Castroneves was fifth. Championship leader Simon Pagenaud slowed in the late laps and crossed the stripe in 13th. Our buddies with the NHRA were in Norwalk, Ohio. And in Top Fuel, Sean Langdon defeated J.R. Todd 384-393. Langdon beat Troy Buff, Antron Brown, and Brittany Force during the day. In Top Fuel, Ron Capps beat Courtney Force 395-401. Jeff Deal, Cruz Pedregon, and Robert Height fell to Capps along the way. In Pro Stock, Jason Lyne outran Greg Anderson 667-671 in the final. Lyne also finished ahead of Kurt Steinbeck, Erica Enders, and Vincent Nobile in eliminations. In Pro Stock Motorcycle, Eddie Krawick won over Andrew Hines 692-693 in a close one. Krawick's victims were Chip Ellis, Hector Arana, and Jerry Savoie. The World of Outlaw Late Models ran last Tuesday night in Weedsport, New York. Josh Richards won. Big deal, you say? Well, listen to this. In a 40-lap feature, he lapped 19 cars. Only the top five were on the lead lap. That is hooked up. The rest of the top five in your lead lap cars out of the 24-car field were Shane Clanton, Frank Heckenies Jr., Brandon Overton, and Rick Ecker. Then the tour moved down to Lernerville, Pennsylvania for Firecracker 100 weekend. It began on Thursday, but not quite. That was rained out. On Friday night, Richards continued his hot streak in the preliminary feature and won over Jonathan Davenport, Overton, Brian Shirley, and Russ King. Now, Saturday began with Thursday's rainout makeup. Last year's Rookie of the Year, Overton, clinched his first career win and had an emotional victory lane. Richards was second ahead of Scott Blomquist, Chubb Frank, and Greg Satterley. The 100-lap, $30,000 to win big finale that night was won by Blomquist. Richards was second, Dale McDowell third, Earl Pearson Jr. fourth, and Jonathan Davenport fifth. With that, I'm going to put a pin in the victory lane lap. I've got some more results to go over. I'm going to come back to this a little bit later in the show. Right now, we will step away for our first break of the evening, and on the other side, going to pick up motorsports author and columnist, guy I've been reading for decades. Hope I'm not dating him here. Bones Barcier is going to join us, and we're going to have some good conversation and share some memories of Mario Fiore. You're listening to Speedway Report. I'm Patrick Reynolds. We will be back right after this.
We got the same motor, we got the same gear. Screaming for your driver, make it go hoarse. Short track racing in the great wide world. Songs about racing will make you feel good. Sing about our friends in the great wide hood.
Canada, baby, racing in the great white north.
Dedicated to the live performance of beach music, blues, and funk, Blackwater Rhythm and Blues Band is the perfect choice for your event or music venue anywhere along the Carolina coast or inland. The diverse background of all the band members makes for the perfect mix to please any crowd. Visit the website at www.blackwaterrhythmandbluesband.com or click the banner here on Shag City USA to book them for your next gig.
Welcome back to Speedway Report from the shores of Lake Norman, Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. I'm Patrick Reynolds. Thanks for joining us tonight. Welcome to Speedway Report right now. Motorsports author and columnist Bones Boursier joins us. How are you tonight, Bones?
Pretty good, Patrick. How you doing?
We're doing well, doing well. Fighting some rain here in North Carolina, and you're up in Indianapolis right now battling your keyboard.
Yeah, battling a keyboard in 90-degree temperatures, it seems like. We don't get any rain here lately, but sometimes thunderstorms, but not bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as it keeps the dirt racing tacky, it's okay with it. Good to have in the afternoon.
That's right.
First of all, let me extend my condolences to you and the modified community who is tuning in tonight. We lost a name synonymous with Northeast modified racing history, Mario Fiore, last week. How long have you known Mario?
God, I knew Mario since probably 1976, knew him well since probably 78 or 9 or so. So pretty long time. He was, that was kind of at the stage when he started venturing to racetracks, other than just Riverside Park, outside Springfield, Massachusetts, which was his home track. He started racing a little bit here, there, and everywhere, and, got to know him really well in that time, and, spent a lot of time with him over the years, drinking coffee and telling racing stories and traveling a little bit together. And, you know, he was a good guy.
My first recollection of Mario, I want to call it about the same time frame, late 70s. I was a kid in the grandstands, and I think it was at Chevette that Reggie Ruggiero was driving with a Dayglow 44 on the side of it with the black car. As a kid in the grandstands, that car just jumped right out at me, and I thought it was pretty cool. Is that about the time frame we're talking about that I think you first met Mario, started to get to know him?
Yeah, that's when I got to know him, but it's interesting that you'd mention that car because before that, he had a stock car product, Pinto, that he came to Plainville Stadium, which was my home track in Connecticut, in probably 1973. And then in 74, he came there with a Monza-bodied car that had these numbers. They used to call it Prism, PRISM, prism paper, you know, that would change according when it went by, the light would change the colors on the car, and we'd never seen anything like that. You know, the numbers, the two fours would just change colors, you know, green, red, yellow, and it was the wildest looking thing. And we knew that was a big time deal, and I remember looking at the car in the parking lot after trying to figure out how they did that. You know, it's just, yeah, just a little graphic trick, but yeah, that was just before the car you're talking about. And then they got that Chevette, which was a Richie Evans-built car. And he and Reggie just got on a roll there, Reggie Ruggiero. And they just that was kind of the car that put them both on the map.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was really not aware he was sick until word came down through social media. Did you know that Mario was fighting an illness? Was this something he kept pretty private?
Yeah, he wanted to keep it to himself for a long time, and like everything else these days, I think, you know, word gets out on the Facebook, and then sooner or later people share it, and everybody means well, but it's just, you know, you sort of feel bad because I know the guy wanted to keep it to himself. He'd been battling with cancer for quite a while, mm-hmm. a long period of time, really, and he'd been, you know, taking medication for that and so on, but that's just, you know, the day and age we live in, I guess, that sooner or later it gets hard to keep anything quiet, and, you know, again, nobody's fault. People all mean well, and they start wishing you, you know, good health and hope you get better and all that, and the next person that reads that wants to know what it's all about. Now it starts a discussion about it, and one thing leads to another, so, yeah, he didn't want it to be a big public thing, but toward the end it was, and now it's good in a way that enough people know that he's passed on, that, you know, he's been getting a lot of tributes, which is something I'm sure he would have appreciated it, and his legacy definitely deserves that.
Certainly a conversation about social media we could take on another night, I prefer. But, yeah, you bring up the point of kind of like the good in the bad, you know, just about with everything, every advancement or every technological advancement we seem to have in society. There is a pro and this, there's a con. And I think we saw that in the late days of Mario's life, you know, as his health was failing. I certainly saw the good and the bad in people, some good intentions of people, but yeah, it showed some incorrect information being spread as well.
Yeah, at one point there were even people saying "rest in peace," and the poor guy hadn't even died yet. I said, "Well, ironic that that would happen to Mario, because he was a guy that was always on Facebook dealing, you know, talking about the latest rumor that was coming up and things like that." So in a way it was weirdly funny and ironic, and that little bit of gallows humor I think that racers all have, I sort of found that amusing, even though it was wildly inaccurate at the time.
Yeah,
it's amusing to look back now at it, you know.
But, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm an Irishman, and you know we're famous for Irish wakes, where that's not a somber event. It's a party. That's a party.
That's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
When was the last time you talked with Mario? Have you two kept in touch despite you not living in the Northeast anymore?
Yeah, fairly regularly. I would see him every year at the Hall of Fame, New England Auto Racers Hall of Fame dinner every November. It was in every January for years, and the past few years they moved it to November. He and Reggie were both inducted on the same day in 2012, so saw him then, but saw him at this last one. Talked to him, I don't know, I guess a few months ago, but we were always, you know, always in fairly good touch, even though I moved out here to Indianapolis in 97, I guess. I saw him regularly before that. But he was enough of a race fan that occasionally we would just call and talk about Formula One races or IndyCar races or what was happening in the Cup Series. He was up on all of that stuff, so we did keep in somewhat regular contact until, you know, real recently when he did get sick and kind of closed himself off a little bit. And but he was always interested to know what was going on around the country, so we always had something to talk about.
That was a aspect, or I guess a quality of Mario that I always really liked, and they don't understand some in some people. How he was a modified team owner, the open wheel cars ran through his blood, but he wasn't kind of stuck on them. He was a fan, as you say, and followed a tremendous amount of motorsports across the board. Some people don't. They have their preferences and kind of shun other forms of racing, which me, I'm a racer. I don't fully grasp that. But yeah, I like that about Mario. He knew as much about the happenings of Formula One as, you know, the Dale Jr. and the Jimmy Johnson fans knew about Sprint Cups. Great guy to talk to.
You know, and I think that helped him as a car owner, because he was always kind of open to the next technological change that might have been happening in another series. You know, he was sometimes the first guy on a new product, you know, a new brand of shock absorbers, or he'd have a product deal with a company that was maybe making advances in another part of the country but hadn't hit New England yet. He was great at that. I mean, he had his eyes wide open to everything that was going on in racing, and I think that if you kind of limit yourself to the division that you compete in, you know, a lot of times you miss that next big wave of technology that's coming, or that next company that's coming along. And I think the big thing with him is he number one, yeah, he was a race fan, but number two, I think it helped him to kind of stay on the cutting edge as far as not being behind on he was going to be the first guy on the new gadget that came to modified racing. And and if you look before him, it was guys like Richie Evans that did that, guys like Jeff Bodine that did that. I think they were the same way. I think they kind of they were the kingpins in their division, but they had their eyes open to what was going on outside of those walls.
Related to this topic, as well as your response and what you just said, something else that Mario seemed to be cutting edge advanced on was he was able to operate his modified team as a successful business. He had a very good business model with it, and he turned it into a profitable organization. From what you knew, what separated Mario in that regards to so many others? Was it what you just talked about, that he paid attention to how other forms of racing were doing it, and he was able to bring that to his modified car?
Well, he took a page. He was very close with Richie Evans for a long time. He bought cars from Richie. And Richie was smart enough, even though he had great sponsorship, he realized that, the less you spend, the better off you are in the long run. And if you can get deals for tires and deals for shock absorbers and deals for gas and deals for fuel cells and all the things that cost an ordinary racer a lot of money, you were going to be ahead in the long term if it was, in fact, your business. And Mario was great at that. I mean, I remember over the years, he had a Firestone tire deal in the 70s. He had an M&H tire deal in the 80s, which transitioned into a Goodyear tire deal, and then a Hoosier tire deal. Whoever the hot tire company at the time was, he was the guy that was testing their stuff and using their stuff. And, when you had those relationships early on, it meant that your tire bills were going to be an awful lot less than the guy who was paying for his. So that was a big key to it, getting all these deals. And again, it does go back to that. He was the first guy that brought Bilstein shock absorbers. That was a company that nobody knew. They were, used in Le Mans-style sports car racing. Nobody used them in oval track cars. I believe Mario's Modified might have been the first short track, stock car to use Bilsteins. And again, nobody had heard of these things, and he came along with them, and he had a deal with them. And sort of like me, I recognized it because they'd been successful in way different forms of racing.
Right.
So I knew what they were, but a lot of other people didn't. And it's just, to me, it was just a decal I'd seen on different sports cars. But he was sharp like that, and I think he, again, learned a lot of that from Evans. But, the less you spent and the more you could make deals for, the better it was going to impact your bottom line at the end of the year. And on top of that, you had to have a car that was fast enough to win a lot, and that meant getting good drivers like Reggie Ruggiero. I mean, I had to do a biography for Mario when he got inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2012. And we ended up tallying up about 250 feature wins that he had as an owner, and I think about 175 or so were with Reggie as a driver. So that was the key. He had a great driver and several other great drivers as well. But having all those product deals and being fast enough to win the big races that paid the most money, kind of all made that work.
If my memory serves me correctly, I believe he shared with me one time that the car basically supported itself. In other words, between his product deals that he got for free plus the prize money, the car broke even. And then all the sponsorship he sold, that's how he made a living. Between himself, he hired a couple of crew guys and was able to keep it going that way. So to me, hearing that from years after the fact of a modified division, that just seems, decades ahead of his time for him to be doing that in the 1980s. I believe he was.
Yeah, but he also did it. I mean, he was kind of the old school Italian. He lived with his parents for years. He lived with his parents right to the end. But that keeps your overhead down. Typical Italian family that kept their kids close in a big house that they had in Springfield. And he didn't have a big fancy shop. He always operated out of a shop that was adequate, but nothing fancy. They won a lot of races out of a shop that became fairly cramped between having a couple of cars in there and always trying to have a spare engine or two and a parts room going. And you know, just all the things that that come with having all these product deals, you know, boxes of shots and, you know, mm-hmm. boxes of different yeah. items laying around. So it wasn't like they, you know, he didn't spend in any kind of an opulent way. He didn't have a big fancy hauler and a big fancy trailer. They just, you know, spent what money they had where it was needed, and, you know, then applied all these product situations he was in that helped him go better. And, you know, again, I think if you look at the idea that the less you spend, the more you've got left at the end of the year, you know, really operate it like a business, I think he was good that way. You know, he definitely had good equipment, but I think that if you looked at what it cost him to get that equipment, he probably spent less than a lot of car owners that he was beating week in and week out, because, again, he was, you know, on the forefront of grabbing all of those deals. And and he was, you know, he was good for the companies too, because, you know, Mario was almost like the king of the trade show. He loved nothing better than going to the PRI show in Indianapolis or the different trade shows around the country and visiting with the product reps that he dealt with. You know, he loved to schmooze and make those deals. And
oh yeah.
You know, and he was always willing to try something new that a company needed to get tried out. So they loved being in that arrangement with him, and it let him race for less money. And again, and if you're going to run it for a business, I think that's how you had to do it. And again, he saw a different guy. I'm sure he watched Jeff Bodine do that a lot when Jeff was winning races with Dick Armstrong. You know, Dick's team had a reputation as a team that spent a lot of money, but they also had a lot of product deals for the same reason. They were winning races. And Richie Evans, it was the same way. Dick Trickle out here in the Midwest, it was the same way. So I think he was ahead of his time when it came to that as far as being a New England racer.
You totaled up roughly about 250 wins that Mario had as a team owner, eyeballing about 175 with Reggie Ruggiero. In all the years together, was there one driver that you think Mario blended with better than the rest? And I ask that with a reflection of Ruggiero's numbers, because they were together the most years, more than the other drivers, and there's a tremendous list of drivers that have been in the 44 car. Was Reggie the guy that connected with Mario?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're the pair that put the biggest numbers on the board, like you said, and they split up. You know, they were together from 76 through 79. They split up in 1980. They got back together from 81 up until the end of 90. Reggie left and drove Fred Close for a number of years and got back with Mario. So, you know, clearly they saw something in that relationship that they kept getting back together. And whenever they did, I know they did better together than they did apart, at least in terms of the numbers they put on the board. You know, sometimes it's hard to figure out why certain teams break up and why they stay together. I think sometimes it comes down to the fact that the car owner gets convinced that he's got the car that's making it possible, and the driver gets convinced that he's the guy making it possible. I'm not saying that's the case with those two guys, but I think every now and then race teams just need to break up to remind themselves how good they were together, maybe. Mm-hmm. Those guys were absolutely phenomenal together, and they also existed in a period when there weren't really stringent tire rules. You know, you could every time there was a caution, if you were running, say, a 200-lap race somewhere, you could pit and put two or three tires on or four tires on if you wanted to and go to the back and work your way back to the front. And Reggie was spectacularly aggressive, and that made him a great overtaker. And that was good for a guy like Mario, because Mario loved the latest, trickiest, softest tires there were. So he was never afraid to roll the dice with 30 to go if they were running second or third. You know, he wasn't afraid to drop back to 18th or 20th with fresh tires on the car and watch his driver go to work. So in that way, they were kind of made for each other. But having said that, you know, Mario had great success with almost everybody he ever worked with. You know, Ricky Fuller won a lot of races in that car. Mike Stefanik won a lot of races in that car. Jerry Marquis was an NASCAR champion in that car. Mike Iwanicko, Doug Hevron, Greg Sachs. I mean, just a number of guys were awfully fast in that car. John Anderson, Bobby Stefanik, Mike's older brother, had driven for Mario in the years before Reggie drove. So, you know, no matter who got in that car, it seemed like sooner or later they were going to win. But, yeah, I think if you had to pin it down to one driver that was the real good match, it would have to be Reggie.
I saw you about a month ago in Indianapolis at the Speedway during the memorabilia show with Lou Boyd and Coastal 181. You had some outstanding books for sale that the public was grabbing. You were signing some autographs for, and I certainly wasn't going to let this segment go by without a little gratuitous self-promotion and allow you to talk a little bit. I saw, who did I see up there? You with Parnelli Jones and Dave Darlin, I think, when I came by the table for you.
Yeah, we did a book probably 3 years ago with Parnelli, who was, I'm one of a million people that could call him a fan. You know, he was just, when I was a young kid, he was already an icon in the sport. So we did a book together, spent a lot of time in California doing his autobiography with him. And then Dave Darlin didn't involve as much travel because he's right here in Indiana, but a great USAC champion, sprint car and midget and Silver Crown driver, and we did his book a couple of years ago. So that was a lot of fun, and we're working on right now a Ronnie Bouchard book. Ronnie was another great modified driver from New England and went on to have some success in the what was then the Winston Cup division, won Talladega, and he was Rookie of the Year in 81. So, yeah, the books keep us busy. Book work and magazine work for Speedway Illustrated, and it's always a lot of fun.
You can read Bones' work in Speedway Illustrated. If you want info on that, speedwayillustrated.com. The aforementioned books, you go coastal181.com. Get a lot of good racing hardbacks and softbacks there. The Ron Bouchard book, when can we expect that to be available? I know you're still working on it. You just told us. When can we look for that to be available for purchase?
We're going to launch it. There's a modified NASCAR modified tour race at Thompson Speedway in Connecticut. I think it's August 11th. It's a Wednesday night race. I just don't have a calendar in front of me. I believe it's the 11th. But we'll have it done by then, and we're going to have a signing that night with a bunch of the people who helped us contribute chapters and so on. You know, some members of the Bouchard family, including Ronnie's brother Kenny, who a lot of people will remember as being a great driver himself. Bugsy Stevens, George Summers, just a number of people who did chapters with us. Jeff Bodine did a chapter with us. Bob Johnson did a chapter with us. Just a number of people who raced against Ronnie or were on the same team as Ronnie, or people like Jack Arute, who promoted a lot of races Ronnie was in, Mike Joy, who announced a lot of races Ronnie was in. We just got a number of people, about 22 different people who I interviewed for different chapters in this book, and we're going to try to have as many of them be a part of that night as we can, so I'm kind of looking forward to that.
And the services for Mario Fiore, I believe, are this week. Would you be traveling up to the home area there to pay your respects, or is that kind of an impossible trip? Much like myself, I wish I could get up there, but I cannot.
Exactly. You know, I'd have been there in a heartbeat if it wasn't for this book. It's kind of a strange thing. I mean, we are doing this book as a tribute to Ronnie, who we lost in December, and we're so close on getting it done, you know, having to pull a lot of all-nighters to get it done here, that it just doesn't allow for taking 2 or 3 days to get out there. But I've talked to a lot of his former crew guys who are on their way there now, and to some dear friends there who were with him right till the end. You know, in the last few days, I've spoken with all of them, and it's just one of those things that you wish you could get to, but you can't. But I know they're going to... It'll turn into that good old-fashioned Irish wake, I'm sure, when they sit around talking about, even though he was an Italian, they'll sit around talking about all those good races over the years. So, you know, I wish I could be with those people, but I can't.
Well, I'm sure the modified community understands that you're missing that for a very good reason. You're putting a book together about another modified legend, Ron Bouchard, that we lost just last year. Bones, I appreciate the time tonight so much. I know you're up against these deadlines. You're working hard, and you still found time in your schedule to come on our show and talk about Mario tonight. Thanks for sharing the memories, the stories, the good times with Mario, and we'll look forward to that Ron Bouchard book coming out in a couple of months. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Patrick.
Take care, Bones. Have a good night. Bones Borsier, everyone, auto racing author and columnist. He probably put down his phone, went right back to his keyboard to work on that Ron Bouchard book that is available probably in August, shooting for that Thompson Modified Tour date, that Wednesday night August date there. Time for another break right now. When we return, we will cover your Speedway Report headlines, finish up the victory lane lap, and if I got some time, I'll open up the phone lines for you. I'll let you know. You are listening to Speedway Report. I'm Patrick Reynolds. We will be back right after this.
Bimini's Oyster Bar and Seafood Cafe has been serving nothing but the freshest shellfish and fish since 1985, beginning with the original location in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and now including an inland location in Greenville, South Carolina. A local's favorite, Bimini's offers live entertainment in season in a year-round vacation atmosphere. Take a trip to the islands inland. Bimini's Oyster Bar, where there are no bad days. Check out the events calendar on the website at www.biminisoysterbar.com or click the banner here on Shack City, USA.
If you're looking to play some golf in the Myrtle Beach area, just call Dave at the Golf Director, 844-GO-GOLF-1. That's 844-464-6531. Just call Dave. Dave can get you on the course with the best rates on the Grand Strand. Just call Dave. If you're a little shy and you don't like talking on the phone, just chat with Dave. Go to thegolfdirector.com in the lower right-hand corner, click chat. In a few seconds, you're going to be chatting live with Dave. Dave has some of the best golf packages offered anywhere. Just call Dave. 844-GO-GOLF-1. That's 844-464-6531. Tell your friends to tweet at the Golf Director. Hashtag Just Call Dave. 844-GO-GOLF-1. Just call Dave at the Golf Director.
Tee it up. Where we gonna hit them today? Tee it up. Got my sticks. I'm on my way.
Welcome back to Speedway Report from the shores of Lake Norman and Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina. Thank you all for tuning in this evening. Good to talk to Bones in the last segment. Share some stories about Mario Fiore, who the modified community and the racing world lost last week. Many ways, guy ahead of his time in how he approached short track racing. Let's step back a little bit, pick up our victory lane lap and some more results from this past weekend. As I talked about, it was pretty busy. We left you off with the World of Outlaw Late Models in Pennsylvania. Let's pick up the ball with the World of Outlaw Sprints. Last Wednesday night, they were in Greenwood, Nebraska, where the A-Main was won by Joey Saldana over Donnie Schatz, Brad Sweet, Brian Brown, and Kerry Madsen. They had a night off on Thursday. On Friday, they towed over to Jackson, Minnesota, where Darren Pittman was your winner over Madsen, Shane Stewart, David Gravel, and Craig Delansky. They wound up their weekend Saturday night in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. Local sprint car star Billy Balog was your feature winner over Pittman, Schatz, Saldana, and Gravel. The ARCA Tour was in Winchester, Indiana, yesterday afternoon on the high banks of the half mile, where Chase Briscoe won yesterday's 200-lap race. The top five were Dalton Sargeant, Kyle Weatherman, Matt Kurzieski, and Tom Hessert. USAC Silver Crown shared the bill with the trucks at the Gateway Motorsports Park. That was won by Tanner Swanson. The top five, second through fifth, Cody Swanson, Jerry Coons Jr., Austin Niemeyer, and Chris Windham. Now, the USAC Sprints kept some of those Silver Crown guys and USAC guys bouncing back and forth on a plane. Last Thursday night, the sprint cars were in Jackson, Minnesota, where that feature was won by Brady Bacon over Robert Ballou, Chase Stockin, C.J. Leary, and Dave Darlin. On Friday night, they traveled to Eagle, Nebraska, where Chaz Boesflug was the winner over Bacon, Darlin, Thomas Messerall, and Ballou. On Saturday night, they began a doubleheader in Kansas City. Ballou wins again. The top five, Bacon, Darlin, Messerall, and Windham. And last night in Kansas City, Messerall won for his first time after some top fives earlier in the weekend. Short track local racing, Grandview, Pennsylvania's small block modifieds was won by Craig Von Doren, the sportsman by Brad Arnold, and the sprint cars by Dave Brown. Here close to me at the Bowman Gray Stadium in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, the Twin 25s for the modifieds were won by Jason Myers and Randy Butner. And the car's late model tour raced in Greenville, Pickens, South Carolina. Tommy Lemons won the late model stock car 100, with Matt Craig winning the super late model race. Don't really have time to open up the phone lines for you guys. Sorry about that. If I opened them up by the time you called and got in here, there would not be enough time to really be fair to you. But I wanted to share, I got some things to talk about. We'll get to all of them as quick as I can. I wanted to share a Mario Fiore story of myself for myself. I grew up watching Mario's 44s, was in the pit area with him, did not really know him that well as I was a crew guy on the modified tour for a few years. Moved down here to the Charlotte area, have made my home, my career in the world of NASCAR for a large part for the past 15, 16 years. And when I was broadcasting this show several years ago, got Mario's phone number, and I called him for a phone interview. Let's see. If my memory serves me right, it was late at night. That's how I recall this story. And I was tucking in my young daughter to bed. Well, I figured while she was brushing her teeth and throwing on her PJs, let me call Mario, and I'll ask him. I'll tell him about the show, and we'll see if we can schedule a date here. Get this done real quick, and then I'll tuck her into bed. I don't know how old Colleen was, 5, 6 years old, whatever it was. Well, I told Mario quickly, you know, here's who I am. I introduced myself, and he did not give me really a yes or no answer, but he embraced the idea and loved the idea that I wanted to have him on our network here at Racers Reunion Radio. And he and I talked and shared bench racing stories, and you know how racers do. We get into that conversation. He told one story after another, and gosh, I could not get enough, and we talked for way past Colleen's bedtime. Way past. And we finally ended it and set up a date that he was going to be on the show and verified the phone number and how to reach him and all that. Got the logistics down. And I looked at the clock and realized we had talked, as Colleen's bedtime came and went, we filled up more than the segment that I had allotted for on the show. As a matter of fact, we filled up several broadcasts right there just with a casual phone conversation. So I knew when the radio broadcast came around, this was going to be easy. For a radio host, and you get a guy like that who's a good storyteller, we just talked to Bones. No problem filling airtime. You ask them a question, they elaborate, they tell you some good stories. It's good to listen to them. They're great storytellers. Mario was fantastic. And that's how it wound up, and I was really happy, and I was looking forward to the time we had him, because as a radio host, you know, these are your so-called, as I use air quotes here, easy nights as a radio host, because that's just, you know, you can sit back and you know the guest will be a good one because he'll fill the airtime well. Mario is a home run. That program that Mario was on, the first one I remember, we used to track, I don't know if we still do it anymore, but the ratings for Racers Reunion Radio, and that airing of my show was the number one rated show on the network that week because of Mario Fiore being on the show. And he brought such a large audience and people that loved him. And hope some of you joined us tonight and enjoyed Bones' stories about him. And since then, Colleen doesn't really know Mario, but she always referred to him as my friend that likes to talk, because she got to stay up way past her bedtime. And when you're your 6-year-old girl in elementary school, that's gold when you get to stay up past your bedtime. In between our broadcasts, everyone, please keep up on the world of auto racing with our website, speedwayreport.com. We've got columns from Vicki Miller, Paul Bluffus, and Steve Zonger, myself included. A new feature is our podcasts, and they are now posted on the site. Tonight's will be up very soon if you want to download it and listen to it again. My latest column posted Friday, which largely reflects the Mario Fiore memory I just told you over the air. If you'd like to read the column, it is there at Speedway Report. I've got two more columns posting later this week. One will post tomorrow, and the other one will post on Wednesday. So please check out SpeedwayReport.com. We've got a good auto racing articles, reads, and program podcasts. Jeff Gilder, my friend, thank you for the literally outstanding production work this evening.
You're quite welcome. It's my pleasure. I just found the podcast episode from that show, and I'm going to put that in the post on Speedway Report.
So, oh, the one that Mario was first on?
Yep.
All those years ago. Outstanding. Yep. Thank you. We'll look for that.
All right, cool.
Very good. You heard it, everyone. We'll have Mario's very first appearance on the show. Will be a podcast. Head to speedwayreport.com. It should be up there very shortly. You can hear more from Jeff and our Racers Reunion family tomorrow night, Tuesday, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time with Racing Through History, which airs here on Racers Reunion Radio. And tomorrow night kicks off at 6:30 Eastern Time with Free Pennington and Making an Impact. Big thanks to Bones for joining us tonight. Always a pleasure talking to him. Ronnie Bouchard's book will be out in August. Have a look at either the Thompson Modified Tour date or at Coastal181.com. Big thanks to everyone on the RacersReunion.com chat rooms for tuning in. Was busy here in the studio tonight. Did not get a chance to interact much myself. My apologies, but thank you all for being here. Could not do it without you. As always, head to your local track. They are the foundation for the entire sport. And I want to thank all of the military, past and present, for the freedoms we enjoy as Americans in our daily life, including the simple things like bench racing right here on a Monday night. Freedom is not free, and a veteran paid that bill for us. To all of the men and women who are defending freedom and listening to Racers Reunion Radio, take care of yourselves and come home soon. And a special salute to the teachers, school staff, firefighters, police officers, and paramedics in our own communities. They are quiet and modest heroes every single day. God bless. And thank you. You have been listening to Speedway Report from the shores of Lake Norman in Race City, USA, Mooresville, North Carolina, produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. All of our NHRA and drag racing friends that appreciate great music, stay tuned right here for Bill Pratt, John Bachelman, and Barb Santucci on Racing and Rockin' with DragList.com. A reminder to like our Facebook page, Speedway Report, and follow me on Twitter at Speedway Pat. For Jeff Gilder, I'm Patrick Reynolds. We will be back live in 3 weeks, July 18th, with coverage of NASCAR's New Hampshire weekend. Indy cars in Toronto, short track racing, and a whole lot more. Thank you all for listening. Happy Independence Day. Good night. Do it for the show.